Good morning, Great Oaks. How are you this morning? Okay, it's a pretty typical pastor thing to do, so I'm sorry that I'm going to do it to you again. But how are you this morning? Okay, that's better. That's better. Hey, for you those who don't know me, my name is Chris Genders. I am part of the teaching team. I have been in ministry for a long time, many of those years in youth ministry, and it might be a flaw of the church to allow me to teach on this particular Sunday. You'll discover why here in a second. So I've got many years of youth ministry experience, and you came in and these were sitting on your chair, and you're probably like, what is this about? You know, you're waiting in anticipation through the worship. They didn't talk about this, you know, thing. Maybe they're going to talk about the sermon. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to create a little chaos here this morning. So I apologize for all of the coffee cups that are going to spill here in a moment, all of the babies that are going to get beamed by a snowball. But we are going to have a snowball fight right here, right now. So here's how this is going to work. You're going to stand up in a moment when I tell you to. We're going to have 60 seconds. It is a little bit of a competition. Middle section, I apologize, you have a battle on two fronts. You are fighting both sides, okay? Both sides, you are fighting the middle. The goal is to have the least number of snowballs in your section when the 60 seconds is over. So you want to grab as many snowballs as you can around you, chuck them all towards the center, all towards outway. So I don't know how you want to do this, but figure it out. So again, I apologize for all of the coffee that's going to spill, all the babies are going to be hit. Anybody who's a guest, welcome. We believe in untamed excitement. This is incredible. I'm a little nervous right here about these two that just came sprinting up to the front. What is this? Hold up. To each other. So, all right, we're going to have 60 seconds on the clock. Everybody stand up, grab your snowballs, and just go. I mean, it's full on 60-second snowball fight. Here we go. Wow. Let's go. Here we go. 60 seconds. This is amazing. I don't have my phone. Somebody film this. You got it, Toby? I need one. Somebody give me one. To the center. To the sides. Sides to the center. 30 seconds. You're doing it. This is incredible. Keep it going. I got some coming up to me. Here we go. 15 seconds. Hey, not to me. Why are you throwing them at me? Five seconds. Four, three, two, one. All right, snowballs down. I'm surprised none got my coffee. I was kind of holding it. All right, here's what I need you to do. Here's how we're gonna determine the winner. So look around you, and you're gonna throw your snowballs to the front. It's like school where you pass your papers to the front. Throw them up here to the band members. They're gonna collect them. So remember, you want to win this. So at least number as possible. Oh, almost. I can get it. Throw it. Give me one. Oh goodness, I cannot catch. It's the spotlights. I'll blame the spotlights. Coming to you. Uh-oh. This one got bigger.
Oh, yeah, we had those.
Oh, is this church's previous snowballs? Oh. Chase told me he had a snowball gun that he thought about bringing out. So that was amazing. Thanks for not stealing them all, because we've got another service still to go. Whew, okay. You guys feeling good? You ready for this? Yeah. We believe, as I said before, maybe you didn't hear me because some of you started throwing a little early. We have several core values as a church, and one of them is untamed excitement, which means we're kind of unorthodox. You know, there's probably not a lot of other churches across the country that just had a snowball fight as they started the service, or had the executive pastor's face plastered all over an ugly sweater. So, whew, I need to catch my breath. Dave, I don't know how you do that singing thing and then talking. Like, whew, okay. Wow, thank you guys for doing that. That was amazing. There is a point to it, though. Here's my question. Does anybody else feel like that moment, this game, reflects our experiences these last few weeks with New Thanksmas. New Thanksmas, right? Like you guys heard of that? Anybody listen to Air One Radio? They've been talking about New Thanksmas. It's the 6 weeks from Thanksgiving to Christmas to New Year's. We're just labeling it one holiday. It's all just one big, long, extended holiday. And I don't know what your New Thanksmas is like, but mine has been a little loud, kind of like this game, a little hurried, a little chaotic, running out of time to get everything done. Maybe that's your New Thanksmas, maybe it's not, but mine has been a little particular this year. We've had quite a bit of travel that I've done, which was not expected. So for the week of Thanksgiving, I was actually out in California. I have some chaos in my family of having family in far-flung states and even other countries. And I hadn't seen my family out there for 10 years. And so I decided it was time to go out. And so I decided in the midst of probably the busiest part of the year to let's add in a week-long trip to another state to see family, right? That was subsequently followed by 3 consecutive trips to Southern Illinois. 3 weekends in a row. One was my parents are divorced, so I have chaos of divorce in my family, and so my dad had come up with his wife from Florida and to Southern Illinois, and so we went down and spent time with him. And then the very next weekend, my mom had her Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving all wrapped together, and so I went back down for that. And those are good things. It was good to be with family. And then the weekend after that, my daughter-in-law, who was on stage here with you with the Chase plastered sweatshirt, she graduated from college with her bachelor's. Give it up for Lexi. That was amazing. But that was another trip down to Southern Illinois. 3 weekends in a row. It added a little chaos to New Thanksmas. We've had Christmas parties already and more to come. Here's a picture actually from one of ours. I work for an organization called Youth for Christ, and Reclaimed Resale is one of our major donors. And we had a Christmas party where we took the students to the store and they got to shop, and it was closed hours. Kevin and Debbie Rao opened it up for us. It was amazing. And we just had a great night with the students. And that's probably 2 or 3 out of 6 or 7 different Christmas gatherings that I'll have this year. We got the chaos of Christmas shopping, which this year added in a little chaos of freezing one of our credit cards and reporting fraud and not getting things. Sorry, Ethan, you're not getting that gift. Christmas, hanging the lights. My schedule this new Thanksgiving was so busy. Karen's like, we need to hang the lights. And I was like, I don't want to hang the lights. I don't feel like hanging the lights. She goes, we need to hang the lights. So I hung the lights. But they don't match because I didn't have enough to go, and so I'm just like, well, we're hanging what I got. I'm not going to the store to get more. I got a tree as I swooped back into town from one of the Southern Illinois trips. Karen calls me, and she's like, hey, grab a tree on your way into town. And so before I even got home, I just went to Lowe's. I walked up, I grabbed the first one I saw, threw it in the van or in the truck, and brought it home. We decorated it. Thankfully, it turned out pretty decently. Same kind of thing with madrigals this year at the high school. I wasn't planning on going. We were going to be gone. We weren't sure if we were coming back, and I got back at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and somebody had tickets, and so I'm like, okay, an hour and a half later, I'm sitting in the high school watching madrigals, just barely made it. Chaos of Christmas. Chaos of New Thanksmas. We all know this chaos. We've been doing this sermon series for a few weeks. This is the final Sunday in it. It's called White Elephants, the Unwanted Gifts of Christmas. We started off talking about family drama. Had some of that this year. Anybody else? You don't have to raise hands or point. Don't point. Unmet expectations. Yep, I've had that this year. Unappreciated presents. Yep, I've both given presents that were unappreciated. I'm waiting to see some of the presents I got this year, if they'll appreciate them or not. I also know I have been guilty of not appreciating presents that other people have given me. And today we're talking about just the outright chaos of Christmas, thus the snowball fight. Can we pause for a second, though? I kind of expand it out beyond New Thanksmas and just talk about the state of the world. I mean, speaking of chaos, we see these things. Military conflict, including the occupation of foreign lands. Government overreach. Political influence from other nations. Religious fanaticism. Refugees seeking political asylum. Mass murder, nepotism in our governmental leaders. And these are just the first 2 years of Jesus' life. Oh, you thought I was talking about now? No, this, friends, this is Jesus. This is Matthew chapter 2. In fact, if you have your Bibles, go and turn there. If you don't, I'm going to have it on the screen. But we're going to look at part of Jesus' story here. And we're going to read several verses. So if you would, bear with me in this. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. It says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of King Herod, wise men from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star just rising and have come to worship him. When King Herod heard this, he was deeply disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. So he assembled all the chief priests and scribes of the people. Is that me, Toby? All the scribes of the people, and asked them where the Messiah would be born. In Bethlehem of Judea, they told him, because this is what was written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, because out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod secretly summoned the wise men and asked them the exact time the star appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. When you find him, report back to me so that I too can go and worship him. After hearing the king, they went on their way, and there it was, the star they had seen at its rising. It led them until it came and stopped above the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overwhelmed with joy. Entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and falling to their knees, they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their own country by another route. After they were gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, get up, take the child and his mother, flee to Egypt and stay there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and escaped to Egypt. He stayed there until Herod's death so that what was spoken by the Lord through the prophet might be fulfilled. Out of Egypt, I called my son. And then Herod, when he realized that he'd been outwitted by the wise men, flew into a rage. He gave orders to massacre all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, in keeping with the time he had learned from the wise men. Then what was spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be consoled because they are no more. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, because those who intended to kill the child are dead. So he got up, took the child and his mother, and entered the land of Israel. When he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father, Herod, he was afraid to go there. And being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the region of Galilee. Then he went and settled in a town called Nazareth to fulfill what was spoken through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. Let's unpack this for a moment. Again, earlier I gave you that list of military conflict and government overreach and all of the chaos of Jesus' time. Let's look at that a little bit. Military conflict, including the occupation of foreign lands. At this time, Jesus' land, Mary and Joseph's home country, was occupied by Rome, the major power of the world at the time. The Jewish people did not own their own land. They had no independence at this time. And so they were at the mercy of an occupying nation. Government outreach or overreach. You know, Jesus, it says, was born during a census that the governor required, the king required. And so Mary and Joseph, when they were still pregnant with him, had to travel to a faraway part of their country. And everybody did. It wasn't just them. Everybody had to go to their hometowns to register, all because a king wanted to know numbers. Political influence from other nations. This might be a little bit of a reach. I took some artistic license here. But Herod is sitting in his throne room one day, and three kings, the wise men, we three kings of Orient are, right? Three kings show up, and they go to the king, hey, where's the king of the Jews? And Herod's like, you're looking at him. Like, that's me. That's my title. I am the king of the Jews. And the wise men are like, no. The real king of the Jews. You want to create some chaos in a country? We talk about, Russia and China influencing our politics. Here's wise men coming from another nation going, hey, who's the real president? Because you're not it. Who's the king? Because, like, you're not the guy. you want to create some chaos, tell a king that someone else is there to take over his throne. You want to talk about religious fanaticism. I mean, the wise men are another example. They traveled from there. We don't know how far it was, but they left their country to travel because a star showed up. Maybe an angel spoke to him. We don't know that. Maybe God spoke to him through the whole. We don't know that. All we know from the scripture is that a star showed up and they were watching, and so they began this long journey. Who does that? Joseph and Mary. You know, they take Jesus and travel to a foreign nation, to Egypt, because an angel showed up to Joseph. I mean, that's not too far of a stretch, actually, because this has already happened to Mary and Joseph. So while it's still unique, they're maybe a little used to having angels show up. But think about the religious fanaticism in that moment, that they were willing to go. That they were willing to go to a foreign nation. Because in a dream, Joseph heard from an angel, and he said, go, leave this area, because somebody is seeking after you. Mass murder, infanticide. This is one of the hardest parts of the Christmas story. I mean, the reality that Herod was so had so much power and so much fear that he'd be willing to create chaos by ordering the murder of every child two and under. Can you imagine living in that time under that kind of a leader? You know, it also speaks to the wise men, because we often think of the wise men being there at the manger, right? I mean, we see that in our manger scenes at home, but the reality is they probably didn't arrive till Jesus was 2 years old. We don't think about this, but think about Herod's order. He said, kill anybody two and under based on when the star appeared. And so maybe he's covering his bases, but maybe Jesus was a two-year-old toddler at home when the wise men show up. I remember learning this years ago, and you know, we have, like many of you, a manger scene at home. And it's got, you know, the barn, it's got the animals, it's got Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus, got an angel, and it has the wise men. Well, I learned this. I'm like, wait, the wise men weren't even there? Like, what are we doing putting them in this manger scene? And so without telling my wife, I took the three wise men and I put them in another room of the house. Because they were far away from the manger scene. And I didn't say anything. And a couple days went by and Karen finally, like, notices. And she's like, hey, where are the wise men? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, they weren't really there. Herod, two-year-old and under. So they were still traveling. So I just put them in another part of our home to represent they're far away from that. She goes, Chris, put the wise men back. And I'm like, but honey, it's not biblically accurate. And I'm a pastor. I've got to be biblically accurate. And she's like, Chris, put the wise men back. So I did. And they've been there ever since, much to my chagrin. Nepotism. We see this in Herod when he dies and his sons inherit the kingdom. This is an incredibly chaotic time in history. It's an incredibly chaotic time in the lives of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. And yet, this is when God chooses to show up. You see, here's our bottom line today. God shows up in the midst of chaos. And it's not just in this moment. This is actually the story of the Bible. If we read Genesis, if you're a Jew during the time of Jesus and previous to that, you don't read Genesis 1 and 2 like we often do today. We've sometimes viewed it as a scientific textbook. That they would never have interpreted it that way. They would have said, here's a God who is powerful enough to create order out of chaos. God shows up in the midst of chaos. We see this in Jesus, in his ministry, earthly ministry here. He's wandering around and he finds people who are blind and he says, this is chaos. This is not the way it's supposed to be. So he restores sight. He finds people that can't walk and he lets them walk again. He raises people from the dead. As he said, this is not the way God intended the world to be. He creates order out of chaos. And we see in Revelation, the end of the book, that God's going to restore everything back to the garden, to the way he originally intended. We see a restoration of creation. We see a restoration of our bodies. We see this new heaven and this new earth without tear
without sickness and sadness, without death. God creates order out of chaos. He does this over and over. God continuously shows up in unexpected ways and unexpected places. Think about it. The king of the universe becomes a baby boy, born in a dark, smelly barnyard. Normally, when a king would be born, when a son would be born to a king, knowing that they were going to inherit the throne, messengers would go throughout the land, royal decree would come out, gifts from foreign nations would arrive, and yet the king of the universe shows up, and the only witnesses are some livestock and some confused shepherds. The creator of the universe, who spoke everything into existence, controls the galaxies, holds them in the palm of his hand, is now utterly dependent on a teenage girl and a bewildered father. This isn't what anybody expected. It's definitely not what the Jews were expecting. They were expecting a conquering king, a military, political leader who would free them from Rome. In fact, Matthew, as he writes this, he's writing to a Jewish audience, and they're a little skeptical that Jesus is the Messiah. And so he's including all of these Old Testament prophecies, these references, to help them point towards the fact that this baby born was the Messiah. Max Lucado is a Christian author. I remember one of his stories in one of his many books. Max talks about being a young pastor in this mountain church. And there was a revival. A guest preacher came in for multiple nights. And so people were coming from all over the place, surrounding towns. And one night, there was this mountain man standing in the back of the room. Big old burly man. Man's man. And he's just listening. He's got this skeptical eye about him. I don't know where that accent came from. David told me to do an accent. Dave told me to do an accent. All I got is an Australian, Scottish, crikey. So I'm trying here. But the mountain man's standing in the back of the room. He's kind of eyeing the preacher. And the preacher's telling the story of Jesus. And from Genesis to Revelation. And when he gets done, you know, there's some questions. And then the mountain man from the back of the room raises his hand. Pastor calls on him. He says, "You're telling me the guy who made these mountains, the God who created these rivers and these trees that I've lived in my whole life, who created the stars that I stare up at night, you're telling me he was king of the universe and he had full access to everything in eternity, and he left all of that to become a baby boy, this teenage girl, and he went around preaching and teaching for a while, and then he was murdered by the occupying country. And he was so poor, he didn't have his own grave, so he had to be buried in a borrowed tomb. And then you're telling me that this guy who was murdered rose from the dead, and he's our Savior." And you can just see the skepticism in his face and in his body language, his voice. And Max is sitting there thinking about all the things he just learned in seminary to defend the story of Jesus, all the reasons and things that he could argue and point towards and all of this stuff. And he's like, "Go get him, Pastor, go get him." He's thinking this in his head. And the pastor like responds to the mountain man by looking at him and goes, "Yeah, it's a little crazy, isn't it?" And he just left it at that. God shows up in unexpected ways and unexpected places. He rarely shows up in the ways and places that we expect him to. Jesus never responded in the way that people expected. They wanted an A or B answer. He gave them C, sometimes D. Paul writes about the upside-down kingdom where God chooses to use the least likely and the least qualified. Have you considered that maybe God is showing up in ways in your life that you never expected? Are you open to that? Are you allowing God to be God? Or are you dictating to him, this is where you need to show up, and this is how you need to show up, and this is what you need to do? because I don't think God does that all the time. I mean, Mary and Joseph, they never expected to be the parents of God. The shepherds never expected an army of angels to sing to them in the middle of the night. Herod never expected to give up his throne to a baby. We did a Bible study recently with some students at the youth center, and the topic of the night was prayer. And one of the questions we asked in the midst of it was, why does it seem like God doesn't always answer our prayers? Because if your experience is like mine, I've had plenty of prayers where I've asked God to do things, to respond in certain ways, and he just doesn't. He doesn't answer prayers the way I expect him to. I mean, and we had this really good conversation. The students had some great thoughts and insights in that. And this one student shared a story about this experience he had last summer. And he was so laser focused on what needed to happen in this moment. And he's begging God. And he's like, God, I need you to do this. And God did not do that. In fact, he did something else that the student admitted now was so much better than he could have ever imagined. And had he gotten what he wanted, he would have missed out on an incredible experience. Are you open to God showing up in ways that you didn't expect? Where do you need God to show up in your life? Where does it seem like life is out of control and chaotic, like our snowball game earlier? Is it your marriage? Is it your parenting? Maybe some of you are dreading getting together with the extended family for Christmas because you know the chaos that's going to happen. And you really need God to show up. Maybe it's in your neighborhood, your school, your sports team. Maybe it's your health. Maybe some of you just recently got a diagnosis that you never expected. You found out right before Christmas that you're losing your job. You don't have money to pay the bills, to give the kids presents. Where do you need God to show up? Where are you pleading with God to show up? Where are you desperate? One of my coworkers with Youth for Christ works at Richwoods High School. They had a night where they took 40 students to Northwood's Christmas production, and that same night, one of their students, a star cross-country runner of Richwoods, he and his dad were in an accident, head-on collision with a semi. Concerns about being paralyzed, surgeries to relieve pressure on his brain. And my coworker just sent a text out to a few of her students and kind of an impromptu prayer night at her house, and this is what happened. 50 kids showed up. Some of them don't even believe in God. Some of them don't even believe in prayer. But they're desperate for their friend. And they don't know what else to do, and there's something inside of them, we would argue is the Holy Spirit coming out in them to compel them to pray. And they are desperate for God to show up for their friend. Where are you desperate? Where are you pleading for God? Where have you given up hope that God would show up? Where in your life have you said, nothing's going to change, God? Even you can't fix this. Even you can't heal this. Even you can't solve this. Where have you given up hope? In contrast to the chaos with which we started the sermon this morning, I want to end it with silence and reflection. The band's going to play quietly. We've got a closing song, but they're going to give us a few minutes to just spend time with God in prayer. Maybe you need to plead with him. Continue pleading as you've already been pleading. Maybe you need to bring back a prayer request because you've given up hope on it. Maybe you've never even considered praying before. You don't know what that means. Just spend time letting your mind wander to God and invite him into your chaos. and be willing for him to show up in ways that you never expected. Let's spend time praying right now.